influence.
That's right. To equally benefit from.
This is an interesting time.
Today, our agenda is focused around a somewhat different topic.
We're inside of this building. We lost track.
I'm picking up everybody's conversation, so we'll, when everybody's settled, we'll get rolling here. Today, our agenda is focused around some of the fund transfers and this whole notion, and I thought that as we begin, is Eric here?
Sorry.
Yep. He's okay. I asked Eric Nauman if he would just give us a little review on the notion of these different funds and the relationship, the difference in terms of transfer between some and others. I don't know if that's nebulous enough, but he'll give us a little backgrounder before we deal with the bills that are on our agenda today. Mr. Nauman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Traditionally, we talk in the K-12 committee about the education aides, and we'll spend most of our time talking about that spreadsheet when we get into the budget. How much are we spending? How much are we cutting? And we'll look at various formulas. When it comes to bills of a fund transfer nature, there is a governing statute in Chapter 475 that in some cases, because a revenue was raised or a money that a school district is seeking to transfer from one account to another was raised off of the property tax. And there is a statute in 475 which, but for that statute, would require that money to credit back to the taxpayers as a future savings. We have to carry that as, in some cases, both an aid expenditure, if it's equalized, and a levy expenditure on the property tax side of things. So, in a sense, what we're doing is repurposing the dollars from one purpose, usually debt service is the primary example, and allowing the school district to spend that money in a different way. And you may choose that to be a good idea or not, but mechanically, in terms of how we track things around here, it shows up essentially as a tax expenditure. Functionally, it means higher taxes, because if you didn't do it, the money would credit back as a future savings. So please, members, nod if I explained that well enough.
Mr. Nauman, it would be a savings to the taxpayer because it would go back to the property taxpayer.
Madam Chair, that's correct. So if we did nothing, I should back up and say that what I've glossed over is certainly when we're talking about the debt service, which is not on the agenda today. The ones that we're talking about primarily on the agenda today do not fall into this category, but since we're beginning to get close to it, I think the chair thought it would be a good idea to talk to this point. When school districts take out debt, they have to levy an extra 5% as a guarantee against the bonds, so that if something happened, there is a little bit extra. And that money tends to accumulate over time, and school districts will frequently ask this committee to give them permission to transfer that money. If we didn't transfer that money would credit back as savings in a future property tax levy. So in a sense, by allowing them to spend it on something else, we consider it a tax increase, and we carry it on our levy tracking.
Thank you, Mr. Nolan. But the other cases, we have these separate funds are created based on certain revenue sources and for specific purposes.
Well, that's a good one too, Madam Chair. What we're talking about today is the operating capital program. This is a component of the general education program, one of about 13 programs. This one fits what I would consider to be the true definition of a categorical. We provide a certain amount of money. In this case, it's both aid and levy. And the dollars have to be spent in a certain way. There is a list of about 24 different kinds of uses. If a school district wants to spend that money for something else, it can come in and ask the legislature to transfer it from the operating capital to something else. Or, as some of the bills do today, it changes the definition of what operating capital can be used for. So if you have a one-time use, maybe you'd want to think it makes most sense to transfer the money from one pot to the other. But if there's more of a global policy in terms of how these dollars should be used, and you think that's a good idea, then maybe we should be changing the definition of what operating capital can be used for.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman. And then because operating capital is both an aid and levy, could you just clarify why that levy wouldn't, if it's it may be coming from both, that it's transferred, does not have to count on our levy side?
That's a great question. I'll try to cobble an answer together. The real answer is that in Chapter 475, the debt levies are there is a test for them in terms of crediting back. Mm-hmm. This levy doesn't have that test that applies, so we don't carry it.
All right. Thank you. Well, thanks for that. Are there any questions that you have of Mr. Nauman before we bring Senator Latz to the table?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nauman, what's the history? Have we had a lot of transfers back? I mean, I just have not heard of that. I mean, what's the history of what I understand is that we get excess operating capital revenue, and then it can be transferred back, did you say, to the general fund, and then it would assume lower taxes? What's the history on that? How often has that happened?
Senator Nelson, this is a complex topic. The legislature has done this a number of times. And what I think you're specifically asking about, because the bills on today's agenda do not meet the test, we're sort of having the conversation in advance of what we anticipate to be some bills that will, in fact, meet the test. And that test is accumulated dollars that are not needed to pay off the debt service payments. And that's that extra 5% that I talked about. And because the school district in question frequently has other needs and it wants to spend that money in other ways, and it's a tempting pot of money to help deal with that, they'll come and ask for authority to move those dollars. The direct answer to your question is yes, the legislature has done this on a number of occasions. Usually this committee has delved into questions like, are your bonds paid off? Do you anticipate future debt service needs? In other words, let's not transfer the dollars until the committee is satisfied that the dollars are being repurposed for a good purpose. We wouldn't want to transfer the dollars if there's still debt outstanding, for example. That's been a traditional test.
So Mr. Chairman, the bills today are not relating to bonds, but they're aid and levy for capital revenue, and I presume some districts, whatever their allotment is, may need that for the qualifying kinds of, and others may have accumulated some that they haven't needed to use for those purposes, but another need has come along.
Madam Chair, and you're the chair, I'm not sure if you realize that. You called me chair.
Oh, did I? I'm sorry. Senator Nauman.
Many times school districts will have accumulated operating capital dollars that they wish to use for different purposes, and that, in fact, is what I think we're going to hear today, and they wish to use those dollars for other things.
Well, Mr. Nauman, if that's the worst I call you, then I hope that you Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to maybe ask Mr. Nauman to clarify a little bit. As I think about some of these things, and I think there is an issue that the committee should wrestle with, is that, as I recall, that when the terms of the levies where the money is raised, we're raising money under a presumed purpose, which is for capital expenses, and those things are approved by voters, I believe, for those purposes. So what we're doing when we allow things to happen outside that, does that raise a legal question that requires in other words, we need to change the law? Are we interfering with I don't want to call it a contract, but there clearly is a defined purpose for the levy that includes certain things, and then if we at some later date change that purpose, what is the message that we're sending to voters then who have approved levies for particular purposes?
Madam Chair, and
maybe these aren't voter-approved levies.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, this may be a question you wish to direct more to council, but what I can tell you is when we do a fund transfer, the traditional language notwithstands a collection of statutes. Now, we don't notwithstand the language that says the voters approved this and we're changing the purpose of the dollars, but we are notwithstanding a collection of governing statutes that say the dollars have to be used for a specific purpose.
And Madam Chair, and maybe Council could clarify, are these voter-approved levies?
The operating capital.
Madam Chair, and Senator Hand, I could certainly answer that. Operating capital is based on an allowance that's set by the legislature, and no, it is not a voter-approved levy. It's a fairly consistent formula that tends to slightly oversample school districts with older buildings, but it's a relatively consistent per-pupil allowance that goes out to every school district in the state.
Okay. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Norman, so when we, let's say, move from the operating capital account to the undesignated balance in the general fund, so that goes to an account, and then the school district will have to come back to us to say how they want to use that money, because that is now, it doesn't go to an account that they have any control over. We have control over that general fund, and they will have to come back to us and ask us. How does that work? I mean, the steps that the school, so we put the money into a different account that's a state account, is not designated as general. They will have to come back and ask, or could you explain
Madam
how
Chair,
that works?
Senator Torres-Ray, I think what typically happens is that when we're, and maybe it would be best to just concentrate our conversation on the operating capital, since that is, in fact, what we're dealing with today. And if you just, on the top of my pile is Senator Stump's Senate File 171. I don't want to preempt that conversation, but there is, if you look at that bill, there's a list of 24 or so uses that the dollars can be used for, and that is legislatively established. When we create that flow of dollars, we say these dollars may be used for these specific purposes. When a school district, in its wisdom, believes that it needs those dollars for something else, it comes to the legislature, and typically it's most common for them to say, we want to put those dollars in the undesignated general fund. And if the legislature agrees and the governor signs that piece of legislation, then the legislature has, I mean, the school district basically has free will to spend those dollars out as they would any other funds in the undesignated general fund. We tell the school district to make the transfer generally on June 30th of the year, and when that happens, those dollars are repurposed at that point into undesignated general fund dollars that they can use for those purposes.
So
they don't have to come back to the legislature a second time to ask for authority.
So Senator Torres-Ray and members, the two of the bills that we have, the first two bills, are not transferring to that undesignated general fund. They are actually adding a purpose for this category of funds. So if that helps with context for Senator Latz, why don't we come to the table and persuade us that. Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair.
Senate file number 166 is your bill.
Thank you for the opportunity to present the bill today. I want to thank Chair Olson for co-authoring the bill as well. This is a bill that, in its essential context, passed the Senate last session and was left in the final logjam on the House floor with some other education bills. So it didn't get out of the legislature, but the basic idea of the policy, at least as more narrowly focused on a couple of school districts that had this particular issue, has already been considered by at least one Senate. The purpose of the bill is to allow the operating capital revenue to be used to cover the costs of closing a school. School closing costs would, under the proposed language, would add category number 25 to the 24 categories already in law, and it would allow the costs directly associated with closing the school facility, and including moving and storage costs. This came up particularly in the context of St. Louis Park because they reevaluated the use of the buildings that they had and the amount of space they needed, and the student counts, and concluded that a more efficient long-term use of the facilities would make more sense of closing the Cedar Manor School. There are some extraordinary costs involved in closing a school, and those costs, I don't have the final numbers with me. I tried to get them today, but unfortunately, the St. Louis Park School District is dealing with an asbestos-related closing of the high school and junior high at this moment, and their staff was otherwise occupied. Their original estimate was between $100,000 and $200,000, and I'm told it's fairly close to the $200,000 mark when they added all of the costs up. So it's a pretty significant expense. It's probably a one-time kind of expense, or certainly a comparatively rare expense, but it's not the kind of expense that would be unique to the St. Louis Park School District. I know the Hopkins School District, when they closed Catherine Curran, also in recent years, they incurred about $85,000 in expenses, and that was when they had a new lessee ready to go and pick up occupancy of that building. A charter school immediately leased that building. Had they not had a lessee ready to go, there would have been other things they would have had to do to close the building down that would have cost substantially more. And a lot of school districts that are seeing shifts in populations, not the third and fourth tier suburban communities where the school age population is growing, but in the urban core, the first and second tier suburbs, and probably a number of rural school districts as well that are seeing school age populations declining a bit, are going to find it'll be more efficient to utilize their space with one less building than they needed 20 years ago or 40 years ago when they had a much younger and growing population. So these are typically, as I say, extraordinary one-time kinds of costs. They certainly are related directly to capital expenses. At least the large bulk of them are, particularly for, if you open a building, you've got certain things you have to do to prepare that building. And if you close a building, you have certain things you have to do to close that building. The kind of one-time expenses associated with that, like moving and storage, are also included in the language that's before you. And I'd ask for your consideration. The bill here is not limited to St. Louis Park or anything else. It's a broader policy change to the statute.
Senator Letts, could you indicate, you said one-time cost, but when you say moving and storage could go on for a long time. How do you envision that being handled? Because you could be paying storage costs out of this for who knows how long if you anticipated that somehow a building might be reopened and reused. Do you see any value of putting some limitation on that? Or because that isn't really one time. That argument doesn't seem to apply to the storage half of this language.
Madam Chair, members, I'm honestly not sure how to answer that. I can see the point that you're making, and there may be some value to having a limitation on that. I don't know if the anticipation was storage on a short-term basis until the property could be disposed of in some other way,
okay,
or
mm-hmm.
could be reused in other facilities. I don't have the details available as to how St. Louis Park handled that question, okay. But I can understand the question that you're raising.
Are there any other questions you have with Senator Letts? None? Because this would be adding a category. This bill will be laid over for consideration in our omnibus because there likely will be some others along the way, and we will need to make a determination. But I think I just wanted it to be clear the different nature of the ones that we may be considering and how we might distinguish that. And if you get any further insights on that, that notion of storage, if it would be an ongoing one, that might be helpful to us as we consider it further in the omnibus bill. So I'm going to lay Senate File 166 on the table for consideration for the omnibus bill coming up.
Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Senator Letts.
Aye.
And Senator Stump, Senate File 171.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Stump, thank you.
The Senate File 171 amends one of the provisions, and I would have loved to had Superintendent Jerome come down from Badger, but it's about 400 miles, so I figured we could probably handle it with some backup, maybe give you a good explanation. The gist of what we're trying to do is currently under the language, which is on page 2 of the bill, under line 2.25, it says that to lease or purchase vehicles, what the superintendent would like up there, and I think it maybe some other districts would use it as well, primarily because of the changing times that we're in. And when you think about our school districts, a lot of them are in kind of a state of flux in terms of their cash flow. Some of what we've done to them, but also I think just the way the nature of operating a smaller school district, you really don't know exactly what changes are going to happen to you. What they would like to do would be to have the capability of leasing a school bus versus buying the school bus. And so and I would offer an amendment. I think I have an amendment, the A2 amendment, that would
has that been distributed?
Would go into line 2.25, and then right after to lease, I would insert school buses. That's what the amendment would do. So that the way that new language would read would be to lease school buses or purchase vehicles. And in cases, a lot of the smaller districts, they feel that they would, if they could find the right lease agreement, it would be more beneficial for them to lease a school bus than to have to buy it, which would they have to put a lot of money out for the purchase of it. So, Madam Chair,
So Senator Stump moves the A2 amendment? It's an author's amendment.
And Madam Chair, it's my understanding, right, and maybe Senate Counsel could clarify this, but it's my understanding that under the definition of school bus, we would include like the Type 3. It would not only be the great big yellow school bus, but I think the Type 3 vehicles that would be picked up as well.
Which are the smaller vehicles.
Which, yes, which, they use a lot in like for small runs and handicapped and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Things like that. Any questions? Well, this is the amendment that he'd like to put it in the shape he is in, but Senator Bonner, if you have a question about that amendment?
Madam Chair, Senator Stump, I'm just wondering if you might consider adding the school buses language after the purchase vehicles so that you would say to lease or purchase vehicles, including school buses. And the reason why I say that is I believe that school districts also purchase regular cars sometimes as perks for their superintendents, or they people travel between districts, and so they may purchase from fleets. And I'm wondering if it also might not be more economical for them to be able to lease their cars. And so if you put the school buses before the or purchase vehicles, you don't allow the school districts the flexibility to choose leasing in their vehicles as well. So, you know, I have a thing about school districts investing in buses and cars because I don't think it's the best use of their money. And so I love your just this small little thing. I think that makes a lot of sense. But I just wonder if it would make it even more open.
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, maybe we could find out exactly what the definition of school bus includes, and it might
vehicles.
Madam Chair, Senator Stump, we're checking on the
On the school bus definition. I think all of us have this vision of the great big orange school bus, but
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if I'm being clear. All I'm saying is that I think that we should be able to lease or purchase all kinds of vehicles, not necessarily just the school buses. Is that clear?
Well, yeah, Mr. Chairman, vehicles could be some of the maintenance vehicles they use. I hope it isn't just vehicles for perks at this time of our economic life in public
right.
education.
I know. That's my concern, Madam Chair.
But
I think I have the definition. That's what a good iPad can do.
Wonderful. Senator Torres,
maybe your staff needs an iPad.
You're going to show up to the Senate Council here.
I think it's statute 169.011, subdivision 71. And it says type 3 vehicles are restricted to passenger cars, station wagons, vans, buses, having a maximum manufacturer's rated seating capacity of 10 or fewer people. So this is type 3, but the rest will be there. So I just have that little part. But the rest of the definition will be there.
Senator Stumpf, you were talking about...
It will cover what Senator Bonner was saying.
The insert school buses, but you wanted to include type 3 vehicles, which apparently is different than school buses. The school bus has a different... Does school bus have a different definition, Ms. Yonkers?
excuse me, Madam Chair and members. The definition for a school bus in 169.011, it means a motor vehicle used to transport pupils to or from a school, and have we defined school, or to or from school-related activities by the school or a school district, or by someone under agreement with the school or a school district. So it includes a type 3.
It includes all the type 3. Which would be passenger vehicles as well, then.
Okay.
And so, Mr. Chair, if you inserted school buses and or purchased vehicles, vehicles could still be maintenance. Could be a dump truck, or it could be another kind of vehicle that is used in the school district maintenance. We're wordsmithing here now, but Senator Stumpf, would you like to proceed and have your amendment go on the bill, and we will cogitate because we'll lay this one over for consideration as well.
Madam Chair, I know this committee has never been too bashful about wordsmithing.
And so, Senator Stumpf, you're looking at me when you say that.
Exactly.
excuse me, Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, Senator Stump, I'd like to know your intent. Was it your intent that all vehicles could either be leased or purchased, which would make sense to me? Was that your intent?
Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, the little school district of Badger is the one that brought this up, and I can understand for other small districts, but I'm trying to envision with the potential of being able to kind of keep a cash flow going, according to them, it would be better for them to be able to lease a school bus than purchase it. And so I think what I tried to do with the school bus was to include all of those vehicles that are used to transport students. And I wasn't thinking of maintenance vehicles, and I wasn't thinking of cars for the superintendent. I just thought, rather than spend $100,000 or whatever for a school bus, a lot of these small districts don't have that kind of cash to do it. And if the local Ford dealer gives them a good opportunity for a lease, they could probably, get by quite a bit cheaper. How do you see it?
Madam Chair and members, Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I represent about 140 school districts in greater Minnesota, and as Senator Sumpf indicated, this was brought to us by the superintendent in Badger, Mr. Jerome, and I think he's simply looking at options, maybe not wanting to inherit the long-term cost of actually purchasing a bus, which is all the maintenance and everything that goes along with it, and where a lease arrangement might be more beneficial for cash flow and avoiding some of those long-term costs. So the particular situation that was brought to us was on a traditional, I think, the big yellow school bus, but as I've been talking with some of my colleagues in the other school district organizations, I think a broader lease authority would be preferred. I think that's what they would like.
So what we have now is pretty wide open in terms of purchasing vehicles.
Correct.
There's no limitation there. You are adding the lease and adding it narrowly rather than necessarily opening it up to everything by putting it for school buses, things, the type of vehicle that transports children, rather than opening the lease option to all types of vehicles that might be. I have no idea how widely this particular segment or this item 22 is being used. And when you look at all of the things that maybe needs within the district, how they're using it, we don't have an answer to that. But you're essentially focusing by your language, focusing this a bit narrower for the purpose of leasing, and that may be an appropriate way to start. Senator Nelson?
I had a comment, and kind of to Senator Thompson and Senator Bonoff's kind of the more flexible, and I wanted to ask you, Senator Stumpf, what your thoughts were as far as just allowing school districts the option to lease or purchase vehicles. And if we have the term vehicles in there, would that not include the school bus and the Type 3 bus? And if there was some district that needed a particular car or something, I guess my instinct would be to not prefer the amendment, but prefer your original language, which actually gives our districts a little more flexibility, which is just they can lease or purchase vehicles with this. And I wanted your thoughts on that.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, you're right. The amendment that's before us is a narrower amendment. And if you'd just have the bill with to lease or purchase, that would mean they could do it for, a gravel truck or whatever. And then it would be basically whatever they felt they needed. I guess that's up for the committee to decide. I think that there's a lot of options here in terms of I think there's some other places where we can lease technology, equipment, and computers, and and so I think the original bill really kind of patterned itself after some of those items, that they could either purchase or lease.
Isn't it?
So without the amendment, your purpose would still be accomplished. It would just have a broader scope than you wish, or do you really care?
No, I think You know, I have a lot of confidence in those local board members, in their ability to make good decisions and negotiate, and so I wouldn't have any problems with giving them the authority to figure out whether they should lease or purchase.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So, Senator Hand.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Stump, and committee members, I guess generally, I just wanted to raise the more general question. There's nothing that prohibits a school district from leasing a bus or any vehicle right now. The question is whether we're going to allow this particular fund to be used for that purpose. And that's the point I think that we should be wrestling with a little bit. I don't know when this fund was first established, but my guess is that the use of it was probably three or four things. Because I do remember in the course of my service on the school board and since I've been here that we've added a lot of things to the use of that fund. So the question I think is, what is the purpose of the fund? If we're going to include all kinds of things in it, why don't we just get rid of it and call it operating funds and just make it a little bit simpler for everybody? Just roll the whole thing into operating fund and just say it's just operating fund. If there is a particular purpose for capital operating funds, what is that and how narrowly do you draw that? That's the question that I'm raising. And I don't know the answer to that. I guess I, from a pure sense, you don't want to include leases as capital funds maybe anyway. But we have done it already, as you pointed out, with technology and some other things. So I guess to whatever it's worth, how far down the path do we want to go to expand the use of this particular fund to things that may at one point have been well outside what the original purpose was? And I don't know what the history of this is or what the will of the committee is, but if we keep on this path, I don't know there's going to be much difference between this fund and the operating fund generally. So,
well, Senator Hand, the next bill gives us an opportunity to look at that.
All right.
But Senator Stumpf, what's your preference to I essentially put the words in your mouth of moving that as an author's amendment. Do you want to proceed with the author with the amendment or leave it as you've introduced it for further consideration?
Madam Chair, I'm sure that for me, either one would be fine, in addressing the concerns of the small schools, because I don't think that they're necessarily they're more interested in the vehicle to move the students. They're not so interested in some of the other. So I for me it would be fine. I can understand Senator Bonhoeff's, Senator Nelson's concern. When you get into larger districts, there's a lot of different vehicles mm-hmm. that are used for different purposes. And I can understand the interest in having that more open. And I'd be in favor of that, too.
So you want to withdraw the A2 amendment?
I withdraw the A2 amendment.
Okay. That amendment has been withdrawn. Do you are there any further questions of Senator Stumpf on this? If not, we will lay Senate File 171 on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thanks, Senator Stumpf. Well, we use Senator Stumpf's bill to lay the groundwork for Senator Cruz's bill. So that's still dealing with the operating capital account, but this is going a little different direction, but kind of the one that Senator Hand was suggesting might be an option. Senator Cruz, Senate File 239.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, committee members. Just a quick a little bit about me. When I first got elected, I was extremely passionate about two issues. They were the defining issues of my campaign. They were the reasons that I ran for office. The first of the issue was jobs, the economy. I looked around my Senate district and I saw so many people that were out of work, so many folks that were having a hard time putting food on the table and a roof over their head, and that was something that I wanted to impact. The second of those things was education. And I know that quite a few of you on this committee know, and the chairwoman can definitely speak to. I requested to be on this committee very adamantly. I lobbied pretty hard to be on here and felt blessed to be given the opportunity. And so with that being said, I bring before you today legislation. The intent of this legislation is to allow school districts greater flexibility in their finances. As we look around right now here at the Capitol, the biggest thing we're struggling with is this $6.2 billion deficit. In order to take care of this $6.2 billion deficit, we are going to have to make some difficult decisions. We're going to have to make some cuts. I feel, need to understand that our school boards and school districts are going to be affected by these, you know, intentionally or without intention, in many different ways. I would like to offer them a little bit of flexibility to work within the finances that we give them. And I think this bill does this. Essentially, what this bill does is it takes a piece of legislation that has actually been in statute temporarily from 2008 on. It allows for the transfer of about 1% of the capital fund that we were talking about here to go into the general fund. Like I said, for the past 3 years, that has been in place temporarily. We would like to make that permanent. And I think this kind of leads into what Senator Hand was speaking about before. You know, we look at this list of 24 or now potentially 25 different exceptions to this fund that we have, and you legitimately have to ask the question, why? You know, we have this fund with all of these exceptions. What is the use for the fund? Could we potentially roll that over into the general fund and you know, and trust our school districts to make those decisions on a local level? I think this may be a step in that direction. I think it may be almost a kind of putting your toe in the water and taking a peek to see how that would work out without actually jumping all the way in. Essentially, what my school district, and I have two amazing people. I represent two school districts, Anoka Hennepin and the Osseo School District. So I have two people here. I have Kim Riesgraf, and then I have Kate McGuire, who's the superintendent out there. Both of my school districts, throughout these difficult financial times, have done an absolutely amazing job managing their finances. And this, for my representatives here from Osseo School District, this has been a big part of that. They have used this particular piece of legislation to actually bring on new teachers and decrease class sizes while we were going through some of these financial trials. So what I would like to do is kind of turn it over to them right now, give them an opportunity to explain how this would impact and help them.
Thank you. Senator Cruz, I should make the confession that I have, in a prior life, been an employee of both of the school districts that you represent and grew up in one of them. So welcome to our committee. Who's going to speak first? And if you'd say your name and where you're from the public record here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kate McGuire. I'm superintendent of ISD 279 Osseo Area Schools, and with me today is Dr. Kim Riesgraf, assistant superintendent. Osseo Area Schools is the fifth largest school district in the state of Minnesota. We serve more than 21,000 students. Of those 21,000 students whom we're privileged to serve, 45% of those students are students of color. 36% of our students live in poverty, and about 23% speak a language other than English at home. We're here today to speak in support of the bill to permanently allow school districts the option to transfer the $51 per pupil from the capital fund to the general fund. The $51 is equivalent to about 1% of the $5,124 basic formula allowance. This action will have no impact on the state budget, as it does not create any additional cost to the state. And the change will allow school boards more latitude at the local level to make decisions to leverage their resources during these difficult economic times. And I've asked Dr. Riesgraf to share a bit more.
Madam Chair,
As Senator Cruz pointed out, the legislature gave school boards this flexibility for the last three fiscal years. And in tight economic times, this flexibility has allowed school districts to make decisions about should they make one of the purchases that are on that list that you were talking about earlier, or utilize the funds to maintain existing K-12 instructional programs and personnel. As in any business, our school district faces annual cost increases in insurance, benefits, transportation, utilities, and fuel. And if you look at just those, not enhancements to wages or those kinds of things, the increases are over 1%. So for us, this has resulted in a need to reduce programs and services for our students. And our district did make significant reductions for the 2009-10 school year. We reduced staff, and we also closed two schools and repurposed two others, or three others.
Four others.
Then in fiscal year 2010, our school board took advantage of the $51 operating capital transfer after the sale of one of those school buildings that we closed. So then we had an opportunity to hire back some teachers that had been laid off, and we were able to reduce our class size. And if we had this option again in the future, for example, this coming fiscal year, we would again, likely our school board would want to take advantage of that. So this bill will just allow us to more strategically make some decisions with a little bit more flexibility to use our resources in an integrated fashion. And it would allow us to deploy some of those operating capital funds in difficult economic times to support the programs and services that our students need in our school district. Thank you.
Senator Hamm?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your presentation, and Senator Cruz for bringing the bill. I want to get back to the question I was raising before, which is the purpose of the operating capital fund, and maybe you can speak to this a little bit in your role in the school district. But one of the things, and I don't know the history of this whole fund, but what the monies that go into this fund are typically not used to bargain contracts with, and it may be part of the argument was that school districts needed to have some way to preserve funds that were necessary to maintain the infrastructure of the school district. And if all the money were in the general fund, then potentially all of it is on the table when you bargain. And so my question is, if you do this, does that increase the likelihood that the money does get used, whatever the school board, or if it's known that 1% could be shifted over, does that not factor into the bargaining calculations of bargaining units as they assess what the ability of school districts are to sustain contract negotiations? And is that a concern?
Madam Chair.
Ms. McGuire. Sorry.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, I certainly understand your concern that adding anything to the general fund could potentially make it vulnerable to being used as leverage in contract negotiations. And then there's a question about whether or not it's can be used as effectively maybe as we would desire it to be. However, I would say that our experience in our school district is that we've been able to use this transfer of funds very strategically. While last year we did apply those funds directly to classroom teachers, we targeted those classroom teachers to areas of high need. That would be our plan if we do it in the future as well. Our staffing, we're already into the process of budget planning and staffing, although pending decisions made here, we're already into that process. And we'll be applying our resources in the next few weeks, actually, for budget managers and for board action. Any decision on this, obviously, would be made after that, and we'd be able to strategically place either classroom teachers or other kinds of classroom support to really make a difference in areas where we need intervention, behavior, math, and reading. And that may or may not be classroom teachers. For example, we use education support professionals. We use bilingual cultural liaisons to assist students in academic achievement.
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Senator Hand.
And thank you. Thank you for that. And I'm not opposed to using money for bargaining. That's not my point. I guess the point is it necessary to have a fund that is protected from potential use in bargaining? And if not, then why don't we just get rid of the whole fund altogether and put all the money in the operating fund and just say, let's not have this special fund? Why don't we do that? and just say, let's instead of doing what you're doing here, which is taking a portion of it or what the other things are doing, just take the whole fund, zero it out, get rid of it, and say however we're calculating that money is now just going to go into the operating fund of the school district. Would that be preferable in your view?
Superintendent?
Well, I just... Madam Chairwoman and
Senator Cruz.
Senator Hand, just a couple of quick things here, and I tend to think the answer to your question personally is yes. I think there is some wisdom in doing it incrementally, though. I think you're dealing with kind of a bigger picture, and in my humble opinion, I think slowly stepping down, and this 1% or $51 per pupil is a great way to do that. I think there needs to be some other things that are touched. I think we look at the January 15th deadline repealer. I think there's many things like that that we can do to empower our school boards to negotiate and to kind of what I would consider be on a little bit more of a level playing field, and allow them to, if it were to be all in an operating fund, allow them a little bit more strength in protecting that fund. What you see here, and especially if you look at kind of the last line of this legislation here, not every school district is going to be able to take advantage of this. This is going to be for school districts that have already met all of their capital needs and taking care of that. So this would be kind of above and beyond that. And I think that in combination with it only being 1% or $51, whichever way you want to call it, is a good first step in that process while we work on some of those other things to level the playing field.
Superintendent, as you read that last sentence about declaring that the school district's operating capital needs are being met, now you probably don't necessarily use all what might be 25 provisions there, but would that be a meaningful statement, the declaration that all your capital needs are being met, or how would you do that?
Madam Chair, certainly making a declaration that all of our needs are met out of any fund would be particularly challenging. As you know, and certainly members of the committee know, the needs of students and of our physical facilities are intense. And we struggle to allocate resources in a way, whether it's for our physical facilities or for staff to meet the needs of students directly. It's certainly challenging to make a declaration that all of our needs are met. I would say, however, that it's a constant, school boards and educators are constantly balancing their investments. We're constantly making decisions between investments in human resources to directly meet the needs of students and investments in our capital and physical facilities to ensure that we have a safe, healthy, and productive learning environment. And both are important. You can't make an investment too heavily in capital resources to the detriment of the people resources that you need in front of students, nor can you ignore capital physical facility improvements, because it's certainly imperative that we have safe and healthy learning environments for our students, and school districts need to constantly balance those investments. We happen to have had the opportunity over the past few years, because of closing buildings in previous years, to sell a building, which gave us some additional resources in that capital fund to leverage in a way that we could put people directly into classrooms and reduce our class size. We may very well have that opportunity again. We have a building that we closed years ago, currently being leased, that we frequently have inquiries about regarding sale. So we may well have that opportunity again, either this year or in future years, and this certainly would be an opportunity for us to meet additional needs in the classroom. So it's a constant balance of investment in both the capital. And as you know, there is some leeway to have human resources paid for out of capital fund. For instance, those staff members who deal directly with technology or infrastructure of the school district. So to some degree, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, to some degree, that fund is not completely protected from the bargaining table anyway. That we have to make those kinds of decisions every single year about how much investment to make in our physical facility improvements and how much to make in human resource investment.
So, your superintendent, your reaction to the proposal of shutting the thing down and rolling it into the formula in the appropriate way, not having this as a segregated fund, what's your reaction to that?
Madam Chair.
Is this protection for this menagerie of items? Because it is. You're right. There's number 24 is to pay personnel costs directly related to acquisition, operation, maintenance of telecommunication systems, computers, so on. That's, you know, clearly a staffing issue.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I would tell you from our school district perspective only that certainly the separation of funds does have us think very specifically about the use of those dollars and the reason that they're prioritized in a separate manner. We're able to hold conversations with our staff members about the importance of our capital assets and the protection of those assets and the improvement of those assets. That's certainly helpful for us in explaining the balance of our investments to our staff members. So I certainly understand the need for setting aside capital resources to protect our capital assets.
And may I also ask, is the 1% magic? Or no, that's going to vary. There's some small districts that don't have a lot of money in that fund, I would imagine. Senator Stumpford could probably address that versus a large district like Osseo. Senator Stumpford? Yeah.
Madam Chair, correct. A school district like the Angle Inlet, the one-room schoolhouse, isn't going to benefit a whole lot from 1%.
Seems to me we've had a line item appropriation for the an inlet school for some time.
That's correct, too.
Yes. Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair, in the past we used the $50 or $51. We actually put that in, and so that might be, you might want to consider having up to 51 or 1%, whichever is the greater, so that those school districts would be allowed to have the same advantage as others. But anyway, back to Senator Hand's question. I'm wondering about the legalities, because in many cases these are levies where we you go out to the voters and these levies, and they're not
we've authorized the levy, not the voters.
This is not a voter approved in any way. Okay, good, because then I was worried about the legalities. Mm-hmm. And then also I just wanted to say that you are well represented, because Dr. McGuire and Dr. Riesgraff, we have three members on the committee that represent Osseo. Senator Scheid is not here today, but you know she's a huge champion of your district, and I have a couple blocks of your district, and so I'm glad you're here today, and thanks, Senator Cruz, for bringing the legislation.
I know where it is.
So this district has an unfair advantage, is what she's trying to tell us. Are there any further questions or discussion on this issue? Did somebody else have their hand up? Senator Thompson.
I guess this is just more a follow-up, Madam Chairman and Superintendent McGuire. I understand the idea of keeping these funds separate within the district, but what's your understanding of the reason they were created separately here, and is there any reason to keep doing it?
Madam Chair.
Superintendent McGuire.
Senator Thompson, I cannot speak to that, to the history of the development of the legislation. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Senator Stumpf, do you have a memory of that, when this came about? I don't know what year, maybe. The statute probably does tell what year this was originally passed.
Judging from the first item, it probably goes back to the origin of the state. It says to acquire land for school
purposes. And to acquire or construct. Yeah, I can see that probably having been all in one sentence, and then we started adding, and then we started numbering. there probably was an authorization for school districts to acquire land. Right. Senator Nelson, you've been waiting patiently, sorry.
Madam Chair, just a comment for the committee. I understand the dilemma here about these differentiated funds and why they were different and the pros and cons of allowing transfers between the two. I'll just give you a perspective. For the prior 2 years, I served on the Budget Reduction Committee with the Rochester Public Schools, where we were looking at $10 million reduction, and it could only come out of the general fund. So it was very frustrating as a community member to be looking at just a particular fund for handling these reductions. So I understand the need for being able to have greater flexibility in where those funds come from. I also understand Senator Hand's point to what was the reason many years ago for this distinction, and that's something that I'd look forward to learning more about in the future. But I do think we have to grant our schools the flexibility that we can in these times of great budget need.
What did we do on the floor last week?
Senator DeGray.
Madam Chair. I think speaking a little bit to Senator Hand's concerns, I might have something of a similar concern that if we were to transfer this money to another pot of money that was made available in a bargaining situation, we could really put ourselves in a position where if we keep going in this direction, there becomes an unlimited amount of money that goes into that direction. I think we have to be very careful not to go too far. I know that this isn't a large step in most school districts, but the different fund, pots of money was set up, I think, for a reason, to make sure that there was always going to be some capital improvement money available and kept separate from the general fund. So I'm a little reluctant to think along the lines of making this change.
Senator DeGrafe, even a 1% or $51 that we have been doing for the last 3 years?
When you go 1%, it's easier to go 2 and 3 and 5. as soon as you start going down that path, I'm a little concerned about the continuation of it.
Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, Senator DeGrafe, I want to say, thank you for that comment. I guess in response to that, we look at a list of potentially now 25 exceptions to that rule, and I would think that for each one of those exceptions, there was an instance where it didn't work out well, where it would have worked better if it were to be in the general fund. And I wonder then again about us allowing the flexibility of our school boards and in our school districts to, do what we ask them to do in these difficult times, especially. I think, like I said, you look at those exceptions, there's probably a reason for those. So,
Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair, I thought it might be useful for one little piece of context. The term 1% has been talked about with pretty regularly here, but that's 1% of the basic formula allowance. What we're really talking about here is a little less than 25% of the overall formula on an annualized basis for this specific part of general education. School districts get at or about $200, a little less than that, per pupil unit off of this line item. So you're talking about, on a permanent basis, transferring potentially up to about 25% of that formula.
Thank you for that clarification.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Daley.
Just one question of clarification, just to make sure that I understand for the record. Is this an operating type of revenue intent or capital?
Both.
Or is it working capital?
Madam Chair, I guess I'm pausing briefly just because these terms have different meanings depending on how you use them. These dollars are specifically used and required by statute for that list that we talked about in the earlier bills. So anything that's on that 24 is what these dollars could be used for. It's things like textbooks, it's tuck pointing on buildings, it's acquiring land. It's not traditionally thought of as debt service, although it could be used for that. But generally, school districts tend to use these for purchasing buildings, purchasing computers, all the items that the witnesses spoke about earlier.
So, yeah, Senator Daley, some of them are kind of one-time uses. I mean, you're repairing it. You're taking that particular expenditure one time, but we've strayed. You know, if you've got some ongoing personnel costs for a given situation, managing student assessment services and achievement information, you know, that's pretty broad. Other classroom information management needs. There's some pretty wide open things that really don't fit if you think of capital as being, you know, the tangible stuff, rather than just operating capital, meaning the money that you have to run your enterprise.
Madam Chair, clearly the line is blurred.
So, is there anybody else?
Madam Chair?
Senator Wiener.
Yeah, I presume we're going to lay it over for the inclusion.
Yes.
It's been a very helpful discussion. I'm sure a preview of further debate as to the sanctity of the non-general fund categoricals. And I would really find it helpful to have the various stakeholders.
Lift your mic up a little bit.
If the various stakeholders want to weigh in at some point on that, a certain amount we'll want to protect, but I think the direction is looking at more flexibility for school districts, and some caveats have been addressed, but I found that helpful, and we're certainly wondering as to how other groups and what will the consequence be if we take that firewall away. So found that helpful, and thank you for the testimony.
Thank you, Senator Wiener, for bringing that up. Is there anybody here that would like to testify on this bill? We've been doing kind of internal one on these transfers. Is there anybody here that's prepared or would like to enter into this discussion? I don't see anybody jumping. I think this will be a further discussion. We will lay this on the table. Thank you very much for bringing it to us and getting us thinking about what approach we may want to take. Thank you very much. So I'm laying Senate File 171 on the table for further consideration.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Is there anything else that anybody would like to bring before the committee for the moment for discussion, or if not? Okay, is anybody here from the department? Maybe you could answer a question: is if whether the department has had any opportunity to deal with one or two of the questions that we forwarded to you in terms of that data collection.
Yep.
Could you come up?
Madam Chair, members, Christina Gossick from the Department of Education. Understanding is that Kathy Wagner is working with Brian Shackleton, who is our Director of Government Relations, on getting some answers back to you.
Okay, if the whole lump was just too big to swallow right at one time, we would be happy to even get one example if they picked a good example of what they could do, because the purpose of the assignment was to bring back some evidence of what kind of information could be generated around a question of interest that could inform our decision making. That was what the whole presentation was relative to the data quality and the purpose of having the system. So we're kind of looking for an example that would be helpful hopefully it doesn't take too long. Otherwise, or maybe the system need a clarification in terms of when the system would be functional and available for that kind of information. So if you'll convey that, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you very much. If there's no further business, I will declare the meeting adjourned.